All right, all of you swimmers and triathletes out there, I know you sacrifice a lot to be the best you can be. All those countless hours of training to reach your goals, which for triathletes and swimmers is a lot of hours in the pool. All that time with the chlorine can leave your skin and hair dry, brittle, and itchy. Well, we don't want that. And good news, there's a natural way to get rid of the dry, itchy irritation of time spent in the pool so you don't have to sacrifice your comfort on the way to reaching your dreams. Developed by a lifelong endurance athlete, Solpre's Total Body Swim Care Pack uses vitamin C to naturally eliminate chlorine. Starting with the shampoo and body wash to get rid of all the chlorine clinging to your skin, then doing a deep conditioning of your pool fried hair, and finishing with a smooth moisturizing lotion with one last pass of that all-important vitamin C. The Total Body Swim Care Pack has you covered from head to toe for you, your family, anybody spending extra time in that super chlorinated water. So if you want to get out of the pool not feeling like a sun-dried raisin, go to solpre.com/go and use the code 321GO to get 20% off your first Total Body Care Pack today. Solpre, SOLPRI.com/go, 321GO, and that's 20% off your first Total Body Swim Care Pack today.
This is a Jeff Galloway podcast.
Welcome to 321 Go the podcast. I'm John Pelkey.
And I'm Carissa Galloway, and we're bringing you stories from start to finish to keep the everyday athlete motivated to keep moving towards the next finish.
All right, Carissa, today we're chatting with a fellow announcer who has announced not only Ironman, but is also known as the, and I would be so much cooler if I had a name like this, the Voice of the Mountain. For 29-0-29. That's 29-0-29. That will be explained. She's also a dopey finisher, headed back to Walt Disney World in 2025 to support athletes with disability.
And Colleen is truly amazing, not because of all the accolades that John just mentioned, but she has such a warm heart and such a caring voice and just nurturing whole presence for athletes. She loves them. She wants to see you succeed. She's been there. She's been an athlete, an announcer, an event ops person. She's done it all and even more that you will learn. John, she works 14 to 18 hours with no breaks. We're going to have to get to the bottom of that one. But I'm so excited for you guys to get to know her better, to learn about 29-0-29. But thank you all for listening, for sharing. If you're doing that, keep doing it. And if you want to keep the podcast going, consider being a supporter. You can do that in the link below. We got a little Christmas swag coming to our supporters. So thank you guys, and let's do this.
All right, Colleen, race announcer, athlete, mom, voice of the mountain. I could go on, but we have to go on with the interview. How are you? And let everybody know, where are you?
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much, John. I am actually in Southern Utah. I live in St. George, Utah, and it's like 64 degrees and sunny on this beautiful late November day. So
that's gorgeous. Like the same temperature it is here, right, John?
We're having a little bit of our winter, amazing. Which is 64 degrees. I think it was going to be a high of like just shy of 70.
I'm going to look
today.
It up. So we are 66. We're warmer than you.
66 degrees. So, but, you know, Florida, still the sunshine state compared to Utah. But congratulations. Well, we're loving our amazing weather.
Yeah, except we don't have the humidity that you have. So it gets real cold at night. It was about 29 degrees on my run this morning. Ooh. So... yeah.
See, this is all the reasons, as we're going to learn, why Colleen is so hardy and so tough, and John and I are little dandies that wilter. But we'll explore that later. But Colleen, we do love an origin story. I know you well. There are athletes don't know you. John doesn't know you. So give us a little time from St. George. Tell us a little bit about you. Some people start from their very beginning and birth. You can, but we're opening.
I don't think you need to go quite that far.
Well,
back.
Some people, Riley Claremont does. If you just tell us a little bit about you, let us get to know you kind of getting into race announcing.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting story where I've always been an athlete. I've always taught fitness classes right outside of high school. I went to high school in Cedar City, Utah, which is actually just north of where we live now, kind of up in the mountains in the foothills. And I remember teaching my first step aerobics class in like 1996, the summer of 1996. And so I came out of high school just loving the fitness world, but I was a paralegal by trade. I went to college in Cedar City, Utah, Southern Utah University, and I got my paralegal degree. I was a political science major, but I always had fitness on the side. So I was an athlete. I was a spinning instructor. I got into long distance cycling. I dabbled in triathlon in the, I guess, late 90s. I'm really aging myself, you guys. When we go back to the origin
you
story.
You don't have to say dates. You can just give us out.
I can age myself to the early 60s, so you're fine. You're absolutely
I'm like,
fine.
I can't be as old as John, so it's fine. It's fine. So I've always had that as part of my life. It's been a really important part of my life. And like I said, I was a paralegal and never really did anything in this, what I'm doing. That was never my trajectory. I actually lived and worked in Washington, D.C. for a really long time. And as a paralegal in a big law firm, a big international law firm, working on antitrust cases and things like that. And I'd sneak out to go for bike rides. And I ran my first marathon in 2001 at the Marine Corps Marathon back in Washington, D.C. And it just was always, fitness was always part of it. 9/11 happened when I lived back in Washington, D.C. And that kind of shifted my perspective a little bit. I was working at this law firm. I was watching particularly these women working 60, 70 hours a week and trying to have families and balancing. And I just thought, I don't want to do that. And I know for me, when 9/11 happened, it kind of reframed some things for me and made me sit down and take a little look at myself and where I wanted to go. So I ended up moving to Southern California and went back to school and got my fitness credentials and got my certifications to coach and things like that. And I jumped into the fitness world full time. Did that for a little while until I relocated back up into Southern Utah just because family was here and everything. I went back into the paralegal world for a while. I worked at a prosecutor's office. I did victim services. I was in and out of court. It was great. I love that part of me as well. Continued teaching. I was doing triathlon and things like that. And after I had my children, my first baby, Sydney, she's almost 19 years old now. But after I had her, I did not go back into the law firm. I didn't go back to work. And so I would just go and teach my fitness classes and her and I would walk the stroller all around Southern Utah towns. And it was great. And I was just a stay-at-home mom and my husband was traveling. We had our second baby in 2008 and I started to be the director of the fitness programs at a local community center here in St. George at that time, which I loved. It was so much fun. And I got to work with all these other instructors and these other personal trainers. And I was doing that myself. I also was getting into, after my post-baby time, I think women are amazing and their bodies can do incredible things, especially right after they have babies. And I just kind of found this new gear that I had. And I really dove into Ironman triathlons, did some half Ironmans and did my first full Ironman shortly after my babies were born. And at that time, I was working all these fitness programs and I was working with a couple. They were actually on the radio and we were doing, do you remember Biggest Loser? You remember Biggest
Loser? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I loved Biggest Loser.
Yeah.
Here in St. George, we actually had a Biggest Loser resort that was here in Southern Utah. So we partnered with them to create a weight loss kind of, you know, fun thing for the new year, kind of kickoff. We actually did a Biggest Loser 5K that we hosted here. And I was the director of all the operations and one of the race directors on this. And, you know, we were getting into this with this couple that worked in the radio. They were kind of our link to marketing and in radio. So I got to know them really well. And as our relationship developed there, her husband, my good friend was the wife, and her husband was the operations director at a radio station. And he texted me out of the blue one day. And he said, have you ever considered being on the radio? And I was like, not a day in my life, like not one day in my life have I ever considered being on the radio. What's funny is my husband actually went to college with my oldest brother and they had a radio show in college because they were both communications majors. My little brother is also a communications major. So they did that kind of stuff, but it was nothing that I ever did. I actually did not like the sound of my voice. I didn't want to hear it recorded or anything like that. So it was an interesting text, but it was right at the time when my kids were getting a little bit older and we were making that shift to them going into school, I had a little bit more time and I was like, all right, well, what does that look like being on the radio? Like, what is that? So I went into radio and I started to dabble in radio, and it was fun and I liked it, and it was good. I was blessed to be able to be put right onto a morning show and become a third person on a morning show with this couple that I knew, which doesn't happen very often. You don't just get put on these big morning shows. And a couple of years went by. I started to manage that radio station. And so I was learning how to manage radio stations and do all the branding and marketing for that. And it was really fun. I really loved my time in media. And I still work with Canyon Media here in Southern Utah a lot. And at that same time, I was also, you know, an athlete and still doing fitness and things like that. But my husband actually owns a sound company. It's called Festival Sounds, and he does parties and weddings and races started to be this big thing. I started working operations for a company called Vacation Races that was starting here in Southern Utah, but eventually went across the nation. And I was working on the operations side. They would hire him to come in and do the sound and the announcing. And it was great. But things were getting, as you know, as your mom, and you kind of get into those later years when the kids are in school and they start getting really busy. It was getting hard for my husband and I to travel together and me work operations and him work the event as well. So I just started running the events and he would work. And then I would take the kids while he finished up. And there was a day that he was really busy. He was shorthanded and he had to go to an awards ceremony. We were at the Lake Powell Half Marathon. And he's like, "Will you just take the microphone and just do the finish line and I'll be back in just a few minutes." I was like, "Yeah, that's fine. I'm comfortable with microphone. I'm this brand I had known and worked for forever. I knew all the people, all the athletes." And so I just took the microphone and I just started doing, I don't know, just what I do. And as he was walking back from the awards ceremony, somebody stopped him. One of the owners stopped him and said, "Who's on the microphone?" And he's like, "Well, that's Colleen." And they were like, "Oh, okay." And fast forward, they ended up wanting me to do their announcing instead of him. So he would come and do the sound. I did the announcing. And for almost 10 years, we were with Vacation Races, working as a pair, traveling around the country to national parks and half marathons and race announcing. And I fell in love with it. Absolutely loved it. So that's kind of how I found my voice. Adam says it was a day he lost his job, but I found my voice.
Well, I think that, I think one of the things that's illustrative about all of that is because you didn't really have the expectations, oh, be on radio, I want to do all this. You probably came to it a lot when you didn't have those expectations of yourself and you were able to be yourself. And I think that's sometimes what people lose when they, I want to be an announcer. And it's like, you develop the announcer voice and hello everyone and welcome. But in the end, you have to be honest, particularly in what we're doing with race announcing. You have to kind of be yourself and you have to be empathetic to what people are going through. And you just have you have such a wide ranging view of any event. But before we move on with that, I do want to jump back and I have to ask a question. Was first of all to say I grew up near Quantico, Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C. as well. So I know it well. Always good to see somebody with roots back home. Were you, prior to all of this, when you were in high school, did you take part in team sports? Were you one of those kids? Because a lot of kids who took part in team sports never transferred over to the running because it was always a punishment if you were in a team sport for running. But did you take part in any of that as a kid, or were you just an active kid?
I was an active kid, and my dad would have loved me to be a great basketball player. I am 5'11". I look a lot shorter on
I know, John. You think working with me is tough, but imagine next to Colleen.
Yes. I'm a very, very tall woman. So I've been 5'10 and a half since I was in high school. So I dabbled a little bit my freshman and sophomore year in high school in volleyball and basketball, but that really wasn't, I didn't love it. I actually was on the drill team, and I loved doing drill team and dance. And I actually did that through high school. And then I went into college and did that for a couple of years in college as well. So I really had a dance background instead of a team sport background, but the running.
But many of the best athletes I know are dancers. In fact, most of the best athletes I know are dancers, and that's also a
disciplined, that's your problem, John.
Endeavor. What's that?
That's your problem. Well, not a good dancer.
We've discussed at length my lack of ability to dance.
And I know that because I've seen him on stage, but he's capable of a box step. And
better singer than dancer. He's a good singer. I'll say that about
myself. He's a good singer.
Well, and it's, the running came along. It's interesting that you asked that because I was tall. I was 5'10" and a half. And my dad, and I, he will never live this down. He said to me, "You probably shouldn't run. You're a little too big for that."
Don almost spit out his drink.
I'm sorry. It's just, you know, the reason that I laughed at that is all of these old preconceived notions. I'm so old that when I played high school football, I'm so old that I could play high school football, given my size and everything. But also, they didn't allow us to have water on the sidelines because you would only, you know, you weren't supposed to overhydrate.
Right.
And we all dehydrated and got cramps and everything. But it's so funny when you said that, I'm just flashing back to, no. You're too tall to
right. You're just too big to be a runner. So just don't run. So I really didn't run. I mean, I dabbled in some like summer cross country. I was not good. I was not a good runner or anything like that. So I think I tried to do the high jump and track one time, and that was just miserably awful. I'm just not very coordinated and talented that way. And so I didn't really start running until I became a spinning instructor and I started doing outdoor cycling. And I had a really strong group with the Color Country Cycling Club in Southern Utah. And I started cycling and I wanted to do a triathlon. So I had to learn how to run at least a 10K to do a sprint triathlon. So that's kind of where the running came in. And then I did that first triathlon in 98, 99, and my first marathon. It was actually, I signed up with we were raising money for AIDS at the Marine Corps Marathon, and we were doing the Jeff Galloway program. And that's how I was introduced to Jeff Galloway back in 2001, because I was part of one of his training groups right there in Northern Virginia. So super fun.
I love that. I didn't know that. And he's been around. He's been getting people moving. You talked about, you know, the 10K for your first triathlon, but I know you escalated to Ironman 70.3, which I believe there was a world championship in your appearance, in your background. Yeah. Tell us about your Ironman journey. It does. It escalates.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Escalated. That's what it happens, is escalation. So I started with the short distance triathlon, and then of course you just get the bug. And Ironman at that time in the early 2000s, like mid 2000s, was really growing as a sport, and it was growing into our area as well. And so they had actually an Ironman in Utah, full distance Ironman in Utah, that they only did one time up in Northern Utah. So it was starting to become something that we were looking at. Also with my cycling club, I was riding, you know, we would go on 100-mile rides and we would go and do all that. So I was getting this distance in. And so I did my first half distance race. Was not an actual Ironman branded race. It was called the Utah Half back in the day. And it was around 2010 that I did that first one. And I was good at the distance. The longer it was, the better it was for me. And I really, really enjoyed that. And then Ironman was coming to St. George. So Ironman brought a full distance Ironman to St. George in 2010.
A terribly hard full distance Ironman, if I can add.
Terribly hard. Always had weird weather. It's early season. It was a bike course that was really, really hard.
Beautiful. Really hard.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And I would tell anybody, come to St. George, because it's like a hotbed of triathlon. So I was seeing friends who were training for that. And so in 2012, I actually signed up for my first full distance Ironman here in St. George. And we call that the windy year. That was the year that everybody got put into the water and a microburst storm came through and took all of the water safety out of the water. And there was athletes just everywhere. Ironman did a great job of getting everybody out of the water, but it was just the windy year is what that's known as. And so I was able to finish my very first Ironman St. George in 2012. And I was the first local female to finish in that. And then I went on to, you know, I just had the bug. I was just into triathlon. I hired a coach. I just loved it. And so the Ironman 70.3 World Championships was actually being hosted in Henderson, Nevada, which is just outside of Las Vegas, which is only 2 hours from us. And we did a 70.3 here in St. George in 2013. And so I was able to snag a spot to the Ironman World 70.3. Actually, 2 years in a row, I went to, there used to be a 70.3 in Lake Stevens, Washington. So I went there and I was able to qualify there in 2012 and then qualified again in 2013.
And just to like pause, that's really hard to do. Just so you guys know, there's like maybe three spots at an age group. So like, in an Ironman, so much can happen during a day. So to be able to snag that twice. Now there's a few more spots. That's a controversy we won't discuss at this point. But that means Colleen is really, really good and not too tall to run. Sorry, I just want to make sure that John and everyone appreciated it.
I don't know. There is some dispute as to the too tall, even within the family.
She's cheating, John. She cheats. That's why she's so fast.
So I was lucky. I was able to actually go to Worlds and had the worst race of my life.
Well, I don't think that's your fault, because I think that was also another terrible race, right?
It was a terrible race. It was the water temperature was 83 degrees when we went in, and it got up to 103 degrees that day on the three loop run course. And it was interesting because that race was actually quite a turning point in my career as a triathlete, because I was so disappointed in myself. I was so embarrassed by the results because I was so focused on performance. And people, this is when Strava was coming out, and everybody would be like, why was your transition so long? And it's like, because it was like a half a mile that I had to run with my bike on this carpet. And people wouldn't understand the nuances of things. And it was just all about people looking and seeing and wanting to know. And I got really caught up in that. I'm a perfectionist. I'm a type A personality. And that was really hard for me. In triathlon, and especially Ironman triathlon, the type A personalities, they thrive, but it's a perfectionist kind of an environment. Mm-hmm. And for me, it got to the point that it was not fun anymore. It was hard, and it was making me feel bad. I left that 70.3. I cried 2 hours on the way home. I just cried in the car. I was listening to Fun. Do you remember the band Fun? I mean, yeah. You know,
John does.
I listened to the album, like, cover to cover. And I just sat and just sobbed as I'm listening to Fun, because I couldn't square the fact that this is amazing. You had a unique opportunity. You did so much to get to this point, and then to have a race, which honestly wasn't a terrible race. I finished just over 6 hours. It wasn't a terrible race, but it was for me. And so that really sent me into a different shift in my athletic journey, where I got into ultra marathons. I started doing things that were on the dirt and that were a little more fun. And it's interesting nowadays, as I watch athletes at finish lines and I work with different athletes, I always am so inspired by the people who are out there just because they can be out there. Like just because they want to see if they can get to the finish line. It's not about a time. It's not about anything. They are so happy to just know that they can do something, and they're measuring themselves appropriately, and they understand what success looks like. I did not have those measuring sticks properly aligned back in 2012 and 2013, to the point that I actually never went back to triathlon, because it was just so hard for me and it was so performance-based. And so making the shift outside of performance and finding the love of what I did is really where I've shifted to. And now, like I said, I'm so inspired by people, the people who just stay out on those courses, and maybe they're coming in at 6.5-7 hours on a marathon. I love that. Like, I want to be that person. I want to be that person who's just like, yeah, I'm going to be here and I'm going to enjoy moving my body and everything that I can do.
I think what we have to remember is even the most ultra competitive, the best at their sport, the Michael Jordans of the world, the Tiger Woods, whomever, you're going to fail more than you succeed in sports. Nobody ever succeeded more than they failed. You know, 3 out of 10 baseballs you hit, you're a 300 hitter, you're an all-star. And that is really, really, and having talked to athletes across a wide spectrum, that is one of the main things in the psychology of learning to deal with that and how you manage that. And you obviously moved it into a positive direction. Speaking of positive directions, I want to talk about your race announcing for a while. Give everybody an idea of the swath of different stuff you get to announce, because that's one of the better parts of our job. Is there is a sameness to it, but there's always something different. It's not as if you're not doing a play. And as a theater actor, I have nothing, believe me, it's why I wanted it to be my life, but you're not doing the same show over and over again. You're not doing Hamilton every night. You're doing Hamilton one night. You're doing Music Man. You're doing Iceman.
What? We're not doing Hamilton every night, John.
I would go for Hamilton every night.
Maybe a little Wicked.
It would wear you out. It would wear, trust me, you do need your time off. But you give everybody an idea of all the different stuff you get to do.
Yeah, I absolutely love what I do. The fact that I get to call this a career, like race announcing a career, is there's days that I'm like, really? Is this what I do? When people ask me what I do, So I started with vacation races, like we talked about, and they did predominantly half marathons and 5Ks based around the national parks. So we would jet set all around the national parks. My kids grew up being towed to all these national parks. It was terrible for them, but we would go every year and we would go on that circuit and be at those finish lines. So half marathons, just general half marathons, super fun starts and finishes, like I like to call them. So you'd go to the expo. I like to get to know the athletes. That's one of the things that I like to do. Put me at a race info booth. Put me someplace where I can talk to people and I can have them come up and say, what shirt should I wear? Like, what should I do for, you know, this part of the course? I love to talk through strategy with athletes and things like that. So I always love to do that. So I'd work like a race info booth and then I'd work starts and finishes. And then in 2019, I came upon this event called 29 Everesting. I had some friends who were in the operations world, and this new event was coming to Utah. They were coming to Snow Basin, Utah, and they were looking for people to work. And these were the same friends that I was working with at Vacation Races, and they went up this weekend and worked this bougie little Everesting event called 29 29.
We're gonna break 29 29 down completely in a few minutes, but I love that you called it bougie. Don't be scared by that word, folks listening.
No, don't be scared. It's great. I use that.
You're like just talking about Mark word. When you say bougie. Yeah,
it's bougie. I love it because I am not a very bougie person, so it's pretty fun to be at the bougie 29 29. And so I saw this event and they had like this branding board and they had these glamping tents and they had bibs and these athletes and they were hiking and it was a new format of an event. And my friends came home and I said, hey, do they have an announcer? And they were like, oh, no. That's only like 250 people. Or no, back then it was like 200 people and they don't really need an announcer. I was like, oh, okay. And they went to another event that season. And I was like, you know, why don't you just give me contact information and let me reach out? I'd love to reach out and see. And so I actually reached out to their operations director, Garth Wilson, and said, hey, I'm an announcer. I've worked with these guys before. I would love to show you what I could do at your event. And crickets. I heard nothing for like nothing. Like he just did not respond to my email. I was like, well, that was painful. And then I was talking to my friend and I said, hey, that guy never got back to me and didn't even say like, no, thank you. I'm not interested. And he's like, well, he's really busy. Why don't you try to ping him again? And I sent another email. I was like, just following up on my email from like 6 weeks ago. And this was super vulnerable for me because I had never done that, like just cold called an event like that. And he responded right back to me. And he said, yes, we'd like to talk to you. I'd like to see what you could do. And I had a call with Garth, the operations director, and Mark Hodelik, who is the CEO and co-founder of 29029.
The bougie one.
The bougie one. And he accepts that.
I only say it because he says it.
Don't say it like it's a pejorative. It's not a pejorative.
John's a dandy.
He loves it. And so I met with them and they brought me out to Snow Basin 2019. And honestly, the rest is history from there. I became what they call the voice of the mountain. And I fell in love with the 29029 community and everything about that event. All its bouginess. I just love it, love it. And so I do that. And then, you know, I was still doing local races here in town. When I was home, I would do local races like the St. George Marathon and the Virgin River Half Marathon, the Snow Canyon Half Marathon, things that were local because we have a really strong local community with races here in Southern Utah. But I never had announced Ironman. And everybody always said to me, how come you don't announce Ironman 70.3 St. George? Like, why don't you announce it? Like, why don't I have you announce? Like, well, it's a bigger process. It's a big company. It's different. And so I pretty much did the same thing. Paul Huddle, who's worked for Ironman for a really long time. Paul actually lives here with his wife, who is an
amazing woman. She's
Ironman
Louise.
World
Paula Newby Frazier, the queen of Kona. Yeah. She's legit.
She's amazing.
I'm obsessed
Paula. They live here in Southern Utah. And I had the pleasure of calling Paula across many finish lines because she loves to do ultras. And so I had met them. So I reached out to Paul and I was like, hey, Paul, I would love to see what it would take to be able to announce Ironman 70.3 here in St. George. So he hooked me up with Tom Zebart, who is a legend in and of himself. And then I've been on the Ironman circuit. This is my second, just finishing up my second season with Ironman. And so I love it. So I go from triathlon to an Everesting to just your normal half marathons and marathons. So all the whole scope, but it's the athletes, it's the communities that really light me up. That's what I love about my job.
I would love to know, talking about Ironman, you just announced your first full Ironman at Ironman Arizona. You did it all. You did the welcome, the race. And I texted you on Monday and I even forgot. You were like, oh, I have the volunteer and the award. So John, and a full Ironman, you have a full day Monday too after the race. So what was that experience like? Just in terms of everything. And then the magic carpet at night, what'd you think?
You know, being an Ironman athlete and having Mike Riley actually call my name at my very first Ironman back in 2012, I have that video and you can hear Mike saying, Colleen, you are an Ironman. And being able to be the person to use those words for someone else is such a huge privilege. Like when I got to say that for the very first time to call in these first females who were finishing up there in Ironman, Arizona, and to say, you are an Ironman, because I know how much those words mean. It was so exciting. And my husband was adorable because he was watching the broadcast.
He's fantastic. We love you, Adam.
Yes, he's amazing. He's my biggest cheerleader, biggest support. And he's all, it is so cool listening to you call people in as an Ironman. And I think that was the best part, because at a 70.3, we don't call people Ironman. And, you know, it's still fun and it's still magical, but to be able to say those words and to come into the shoes and the footprints of someone like Mike Riley, who set that landscape up, is pretty special. And I really love that. It was so fun. I'll tell you, it's hard not to lose your voice at a full Ironman.
Because you, like I said, voice. you can't say, Colleen, you are an Ironman. You have to be up every single, it's not talking. You really, even as much as you are smart about protecting your voice, I know it gets you. And then I've said the struggle is, and I don't know if you found this, sometimes you can say nothing else.
Right.
Not like you've got that big, beautiful smile. Oh, I'm so proud. It's just you, because someone else is coming. Yeah. It's a different, it's very different from anything else.
It is. It's a very different finish line, because you're trying to give each and every one of those athletes the experience that they're expecting at this Ironman finish line. So it is very, very different from any other finish line.
And like timing it, because like if there's an empty corral, I kind of want to say, man, like, a few steps so they get the, you know what I mean? Like it's trying to time it
for
all.
Sure. If anybody is an Ironman, if you're training for an Ironman and you're going to be finishing, make sure that you don't to race somebody to finish. Like just slow down.
Or else you get, Colleen, you're an Ironman. Adam, you're an Ironman. John, you're an Ironman. Instead of, Colleen, you're an
Ironman. It's what we tell them at Disney when they get in those big clumps at the hour 7 of the marathon. Please get into single file line and run more slowly if you want your name. That's the only way it's going to happen, folks.
Yes. Yeah, we'd love to make some magic for you, but we can't do it when there's 25 people coming in.
No. So. We are always aiming to get you to that next finish line, and we've created an exciting opportunity for you guys coming up with Galloway Customized Training. Check the show notes for more information on how to sign up, and here's Chris with a little more about Customized.
Hi. I'm Chris Twiggs, Chief Training Officer at Galloway Training Programs and coach of Galloway Customized Training. When Jeff Galloway and I put together Customized Training, our goal was to offer the best value in professional coaching for runners and walkers. Starting from a questionnaire to determine your current fitness, goals, and commitments to family and work, I build a schedule that's perfect for you, but it doesn't end there. Each week with your feedback, I adjust your plan to help you reach your goals, and I introduce you to a worldwide family of customized runners and walkers who are cheering you on. I look forward to working with you and to being your coach and your biggest fan as we run, walk, run with Galloway Customized Training.
Right. I want to, in a minute, go into like an understanding of 29 of 29, because, you know, a lot of people don't know what it is. But you and I have some new races that we're going to get to do, not together, but separately in 2025. Do you want to share the new races that you'll be doing?
Yeah, so excited that Chris and I are going to be on the Rock and Roll Marathon schedule. And so we're going to be lead announcers for these iconic events. I mean, that's what I thought, Carissa, when Z had called us and was like, hey, you know, we've got some spots available here, because Anne, who's done it for years and years and years, wasn't able. And she's incredible, amazing. She'll still be in Las Vegas, but she is kind of stepping back into her family, which is great, and fully support that. But it opens up this opportunity for us to be at some of these iconic events. I mean, I'm going to be at Rock and Roll Arizona and then Rock and Roll San Diego. I mean, that's like the hallmark of these rock and roll events. So how exciting to be with these huge communities and just legendary events.
Yeah, so we won't actually ever be together, but what she's not at, I'll be at Rock and Roll DC, Rock and Roll Nashville, and then Rock and Roll
San
Jose.
Carissa and I are always on opposite sides of the spectrum.
Or opposite sides of a mountain, either way.
we're just always around each other. But you know,
or you're running and I'm announcing. I'm excited about that, you know, for both of us, because they are just, it's a really fun race. It's, you know, when I was talking to Z about it, it's the closest that for me I can get to Run Disney without being at, you know, Run Disney, because the idea is fun. The idea is just celebration and entertainment and all that stuff. But let's dive in. Some of our listeners have heard me talk about 29029 and the times I've shadowed you, and then a little bit at Stratton. But to people that is a foreign concept, even John, we haven't read the intro yet, John, but I wrote it out for you, 29029, because
I read it.
We don't say zero around there. Some people do, but I always say 29029. That's
and
how
I had
do.
To learn rehearse that to not say it wrong. But Everesting, tell somebody who's never heard that what that means. What is the event? What it's like? Give us the breakdown.
Yeah, Everesting is a concept of gaining the vertical feet of Mount Everest, which is 29,029 feet. Everesting, the concept actually comes from the cycling world, where cyclists were doing this. They were riding up these steep hills, and then they would descend back down, and they would ride up that hill until they accumulated 29,029 feet. So it's been around for a while, this concept, and athletes have been doing it. But what's interesting is Jesse Itzler and Mark Hodelik back in 2016 were running the Leadman ultramarathon, if you know what Leadman is, over in Colorado. They were running that together, and they also live close to each other, and just came up with this concept of, what if we, instead of doing distance, instead of telling people to go a little farther or something like that, what if we did something that was based on elevation gain? And that's where this Everesting concept came about. They thought, okay, let's go to a ski mountain. Let's go to a resort and let's climb the hill as many times as we need to gain 29,029 feet. And so in 2017 at Stratton Mountain, Vermont, they brought a group of people there who they were able to convince to come and try this concept. And they had tried it themselves, but not in the same way. They had the gondola. You're at a ski resort, so you have a gondola accessing to come down. So you're never having to come down. So you just hike up and then you're able to gondola down. So this concept was really born at 29029 in 2017. And people loved it. They didn't know if people would come back, and they have come back. So basically at 29029, we go to a beautiful resort. We have Stratton Mountain, Vermont, like I talked about. We go to Snow Basin, Utah, Sun Valley, Idaho, Whistler up in British Columbia. We will go to Mont Tremblant in Quebec. And we take these resorts. We hike all the way up to the summit. We let them gondola back down, and they do that depending on the elevation gain that you make on these different tracks. In Whistler, you only have to do it 8 times. When Chris and I were in Stratton, they have to do it 17 times when they're there. In Jackson Hole, they have to do it 19 times. Snow Basin is 13. So it just depends on the mountain, but it's this really unique 36-hour challenge. Can you find your Everest? Can you climb 29,029 feet in 36 hours? So it's just a fun elevation-based challenge.
You say fun, but it's very hard, and it's very nuanced. Very there's no time. There's not even timing chips, John, which to me, I just want a nice little announcer mat. Like, let me say your name, like put a chip on the damn person. But there's not, because I don't want it to be time-based. But what I have found most interesting at the ones I've been at is the people who don't make it, not because they couldn't, because they didn't manage their time, or they didn't sort of like lean in to like, no, do you know what, Colleen, do you know what I'm talking about? Like, yeah. That's part of the challenge, is not just, it's a mental challenge too.
Well, and you have to think 36 hours, even someone who's done 100 miler, it could have taken them less than 36 hours to do that. You know, most 100 milers are somewhere around 24 to 28 hours. So 36 hours is a long period of time. And I think what's so interesting about 29029 and the way that it's set up is it is doable, but you have to manage your time, because if you get caught sitting and having lunch for a little too long, or you go to the recovery lounge and you're in there for a few too many hours, or you decide to take a nap and you're a little long on that, and you're just not really present in how quickly that time slips away, you can run out of time. But what I also love is not everybody comes to this challenge at 29 on 29 wanting to finish. They just come saying, I've never done something like this. I want to see how far I can go. And sometimes that leads them to Everest. Sometimes we also use benchmarks through the seven highest summits on the seven continents of the world. So you kind of work through these lower summits on your way to Everest. And it's not as much about that finish line as it is about, can you manage your time? Can you stay out there? Can you get uncomfortable? Can you lean into this challenge and stay out and see what you're made of? And that's really the beauty of 29 or 29 is this kind of this book that's open, unwritten. What do you want to, how do you want to write that book? What do you want it to be at the end?
It's not a run where you're like racing and huffing and puffing and I can't do this anymore. It's like, no, I can do this, but how much do I want to?
Yeah. Yes. Do I want to? Like last year, you know, Carissa, you were just at Stratton with us and we talked about how the weather was so much better this year in Stratton because in 2023, when we were at Stratton, we got 4.5 inches of rain and it was 50 degrees. And at the top of the mountain, it was just freezing, but we still had almost half of our field finish and complete 29,000.
Including your husband.
Including my husband. And it was some of the worst conditions I have ever worked in as a race announcer ever before. And I've worked in some really tough conditions. And these athletes just, they stayed out there. And it was really impressive to watch them manage themselves so that they could stay in these elements. They could get it done. It's super inspiring, just like any event is. It's super inspiring to see what people actually bring to these challenges.
I think it's just remarkable because, you know, fastest growing participatory sport is distance running, distance biking, whatever, that the creative ways that people come up to challenge other people and challenge themselves. And I'm just sitting here thinking, how do you train for that? Particularly if you live in Florida, my God, I'd have to run back and forth to Miami 864 times to elevate. If you add any of the elevation in there, it's ridiculous. Now I have it on good authority that you challenge yourself in one of these events by not taking any breaks. I'm opposed to that as an announcer. I'm in favor. Carissa can let you know when they finally started building breaks into our stuff at Run Disney, it made our life so much better because we were competitive. It's like, well, I can't even go to the bathroom. I'm sorry. I'm going to wear a diaper because I cannot leave the announcing stand. So is it true you don't take any breaks? And why, Colleen? Why? Take the breaks the good Lord intended you to.
You know, it's funny, John. This is a really funny conversation because I've always worked alone. So I've never worked in a team of people. So whenever I'm announcing, it's just me. And so if I go off the mic, there's nobody there. And you know what happens to participants. I mean, you know what happens when you go on break. They're like, but where did you go? How could you have left us? It's like people.
9 straight hours. You finally use the bathroom and they're all complaining because you were gone for 5 minutes. Yep,
you know,
absolutely.
Don't write it in the survey, please. Colleen has to pee every once in a while. And so I've always worked alone. And it was interesting because when it was honestly, when I started working for Ironman, that they do have quite schedules. Yes. And I remember Z and I sitting next to each other in St. George. And he's like, all right, we're going to do 30 on, 30 off. And I was like, excuse me, what was that? What do you mean 30 on 30 off? Like I'm good. I've got everything I need right here. I'm great. And he's like, oh no, we just go back and forth. I was like, oh, what am I supposed to do when I'm not doing that? It was so different for me because I've always worked alone and it was never because I just thought I had to be there all the time. It was more of a function of, it's just me. I'm the only one. And so, and at 29 or 29, I get so fully immersed in what's happening because we have this ascent board where they have branding irons and they make these triangle logos as they go up. If it's 13 times, every time they go 1, 2, 3, they all go all the way up to 13. They got to brand the board every time they see me. And that's where I am, is down there. And so I've got people coming in all the time and it's like, Carissa, how are you doing? Have you peed lately? Did you eat? Let's brand your board. And it's sometimes I say I'm not the voice of the mountain, I'm the mom of the mountain. And so I just would find myself working and yeah, I would get done and I'd be on my feet for 18 hours and I had walked 13 miles in the span of like maybe not even 50 yards. And so yeah, it's an endurance sport. It definitely is an endurance sport because as an announcer, we have to take care of ourselves too. Like we have to stay hydrated. We have to stay fueled. We have to go to the bathroom. And it really is. I will finish, especially a 29 or 29 event, and I will feel like my body will feel like I ran an ultra. Like it takes some recovery from that. So,
but you are a hardy, you are a hardy one. And John and I are just some dandies down here, I think. But I make fun of the other Run Disney announcers, because we, you know, are all like, woe is me. I have to wake up at 12:30 a.m. and I work, you know, a whole 9 hours. And now after Ironman, I'm like, oh, well, you know,
yeah, for you, I've got to do 4 more days.
Call me in another 12 hours and see how it's going. Now, 29 or 29, we should have gotten you on 2 weeks ago, because now it is already all full and it's sold out, I'm guessing, quite quickly.
Yes.
For this year. I know one Run Disney athlete, Aaron, is going to be at Snow Basin, but we had a Run Disney athlete that I hope we're going to have on the podcast soon in 2029, Missy, who came to Snow Basin. Can you share a little bit about Missy's journey there?
Yeah, Missy Huffman, she's amazing. And I have to tell you a funny story about that, because last year, like you guys said, I went to Run Disney Marathon Weekend in Disney World in January, and I was down there with the Kyle Peace Foundation, and my husband and I were just running the 4 events. So we did the event, and it was super fun. We had so much fun. I just have to pull my husband back from all of the time we spent in the park when we weren't running. I was like, yeah, we can't do that. But we had a great time. And we got to the airport after the event, and I'm checking in my bags and doing all my things, and I hear, Colleen, are you Colleen Rue? And I was like, who in the heck knows me here in Orlando? Like, I wasn't even on the microphone. Like, who is this? I turned around and it was Missy. And she said, my name is Missy Huffman, and I wanted to meet you because I'm going to be at Snow Basin with 29 or 29. And so it was so fun to get to meet her in January when we were looking forward to an August event. And so her and I communicated, and we would text back and forth and stay in touch as she was journeying towards her Everest. And, you know, as you know, or maybe your community knows, that Missy has Parkinson's disease, and she's working through that and trying to overcome all the, you know, it's kind of these labels and boundaries that we put on these different types of diagnoses that we have, or, you know, saying, oh, well, I can't do this anymore. I'm too old, or I've been diagnosed with this. And it's people like Missy who are breaking those molds and saying, yeah, sure, I have this, but I'm going to keep exploring my limits. I'm going to keep doing it. And Snow Basin at 29 or 29, it tends to be hot. It tends to be dry. It's definitely a challenging mountain. There's no easy way to 29 or 29. I like to tell people there's no easy way. And she came there, and she was, of course, with her husband, and she had her support team there, and she was able to reach the first of the 7 summits, Kosciuszko, in Snow Basin with us. And I remember her coming off the gondola after her final ascent that she made, and I was waiting for her to come down, because I transitioned to the top of the mountain late in the day on Saturday when we're finishing up all the athletes to call everybody in across the red carpet. And I waited for Missy to come to the base so that I could help her with her final brand and make the mark on the back of her bib. And, you know, it's people like her that, going back to what we were talking about with my Ironman 70.3 World Championships disaster that I had, it's people like Missy who teach me the greatest lessons, because she's just getting out there and doing it because she wants to, because she wants to try, she wants to explore. Why am I so caught up in my times and if I'm doing things right, if I'm perfect, if I'm in the top of my age group? Why am I so caught up in that when it's really about this journey and about what can I do today, no matter what the world's throwing at me? And I just love her for that. And so every time I see her name come up in my inbox, it just makes me smile. And I'm excited to have her at Mont Tremblant this year. She's going to love that mountain. It's very different than Snow Basin, and I actually think it's going to work really well for her. Her and I kind of strategized to see what the best location would be for her. So it's going to be great.
She's a friend of mine as well, and she was actually messaging from 29 or 29, and she was so excited to be taking part in that challenge. And I just thought it was one of the more inspirational stories in a career where we hear just inspirational story after inspirational story. If you don't believe in the human spirit, come out to a couple of races and let people interview some of those athletes and what they're going through. All right, I want to jump back. And if, for everyone listening, my dog, Emmy Lou, who people listen know well, she's going crazy here in the recording room. Mommy's not home. She's off seeing Wicked. So I'm dealing with the puppy. So I want to jump back to Disney because you mentioned, oh, my husband came in, we came down and we did the four races. Okay, you did the dopey. All right. So it's not just we did the four races.
And it was hard, you guys. It was really hard.
I bet it was really hard. Were you a Disney fan prior to coming? And what did you think about our little race here in Central Florida?
Your little teeny tiny race. Number one, you guys have the best porta potties I've ever seen at any race ever.
My God. Like, I'm telling Riley that. That's going to be, that will be announced and you will be quoted in January.
Please, because we got there and my husband and I were like, I've never seen so many porta potties in my entire life. We didn't wait in a line for a porta potty at the start finish line area the entire time we were there. Like, it was amazing. That was our first, because operationally we love to come and see just how everything's set up. And that was our first thing where we're like, wow, there's so many porta potties. How do they even get this many porta potties?
But if that was after years of watching people run into the woods prior to the start, and I'm not telling tales out of school.
No, and they put animal sounds. They put speakers with animal sounds in the woods to deter people from going to the bathroom in the woods. It didn't matter.
It didn't matter. Men. It didn't matter.
Not at all.
What's funny about Marathon Weekend with Disney is back in, taking you guys way back to 2002, when I was living in Washington, D.C., I signed up to run the Disney World Marathon. I don't even think they had Dopey back then.
No. They didn't have a half back then. That's when we started the year. The half came in. So you literally had a Disney Marathon. That's what you had.
Yeah, it was just a Disney Marathon. Yeah. And I had signed up for that. But I had run the Marine Corps Marathon in October that year. And unfortunately, I got injured and I wasn't able to run. So in 2002, my whole entire family was coming out and they had never, my family is, they had never been at a lot of finish lines, but they all wanted to go to Disney World. So everybody came out, but I wasn't able to run. So I remember I went to the expo, I picked up my stuff, but I wasn't able to run that weekend. So fast forward, 22 years later?
Yeah.
I actually got the opportunity to come back because of Kyle Peace Foundation, and it was so much fun. And I remember when Brent's like, he said, hey, I've got some dopey slots available with Kyle Peace. Would you guys be interested in them? And I was like, yeah, that's great. And then I looked at Adam and I'm like, so it's this 5K, 10K, half marathon, and then marathon. And he's like, wait, what? Like all of them? And I was like, yeah. And it just gets longer every single day.
It's just long. It's just
and
wrong.
It'd be easier. Like, you could do the 5K and then you could do the 10K in one day, right? But like, it's the everyday thing that's very tired.
And I mean, the races start at 5 a.m. Let's be honest, you guys. They start quite early in the morning.
I'm calling the marathon this time starts at 4:30.
I just remembered that as I said that. I was like, wait, we got an email about that. They changed it even earlier. So
Johnny has to get home to watch playoff football. So we have to do this thing earlier.
Don't blame Riley for it. So yeah, we had so much fun last year. It was so hard. My husband, it's funny because my husband and I are very different people and we run very differently. He's that person who just runs for fun and he's great at it. I'm the one who just gets all caught up in things. He was like riding Everest. He was riding like Hollywood Tower of Terror. Like, he was doing like all of the fun things because he's like, I got to do this. It rained on the marathon day when we were out kind of in Animal Kingdom before we got there. And so we got soaking wet. And I'm like, Adam, I can't stop and do this roller coaster because I'm going to get freezing and then I'm never going to warm back up again. He's like, well, I'm going. And so he's just like a kid in a candy store. And me, I'm just like dialed in, like, I got to get the miles done. And so we run very, very differently from each other. But we had so much fun and we brought home so much bling. And the fact that you get like the OG Mickey ears at the end of the marathon was like my most favorite thing ever. So just loved it.
Well, we're glad you'll be back. You're going to have to do a little more mileage this time because I think you ran the half of the half, right?
We actually finished the whole half because, yes, the half was canceled. And so we ran in the parking lot with everybody for a while. And then we went back to Pop Century and we finished our miles.
Which is 100% what I would have totally
yeah.
what I would have done.
Because I was
too.
Like, I've got to finish the mileage because I can't leave here if I don't hit the 40.
I know. I totally, like, we couldn't say anything about the people like running in the parking lot before him, but like, yeah. I was just like, I see you. You know, obviously, we yeah. can't encourage
no.
that.
So we did. We ended up getting the mileage in just over at Pop Century, just around the little ponds around there. So it was great. But we're excited to be back and we're actually going to be pushing an in-chair athlete with the Kyle Peace Foundation, Kylie, this year. So that's going to be super fun. So
we love that. We love Kyle and Brent Peace. We've had them on the podcast. Why, you mentioned before, you know, doing things for charity and charity racing. Why is it important for you to support the athletes with disabilities in the endurance community?
Giving everyone the opportunity to experience those finish lines. We talked about Ironman, being called an Ironman, what that feels like to become an Ironman. Or for me, you know, finishing the Boston Marathon for the very first time, that feeling of that. And to realize that there's individuals out there who are told they can't have those experiences because, like we talked about, because of a diagnosis or because of something that is in their life, a challenge that they have. And to be able to connect with these individuals and give them those experiences and give their families the experience of sitting on the sidelines and cheering on their sons and daughters and their husbands and wives, like that is so incredible. And as I've really tried to let go of that type A personality and that focus on finishing and finish times and on what I'm accomplishing and shifting it more to, hey, let's go and do great things and be great people and take others along with us. That has been really that shift for me. And when I met Brent and Kyle, I actually work with Brent at 29 on 29. It was just this simple, like, of course, like, give me an athlete, give me a chair. Mm-hmm. And it has really opened my eyes to what those athletes also provide and the struggles that they go through in their own races that they have. And it really is just absolutely incredible. And to watch their parents, I was pushing at the Marine Corps Marathon last year for Jacob, and you know, we were in the last 6 miles and he's not very verbal, but he can say mama. And he just was calling for his mom because I was going too slow and it was super hot and we were trying to get that chair across the finish line. And he had to dig deep. And I was like, Jake, I know, buddy, I know you want your mom and we're going to be there as soon as we can. And it's not easy for them. And what was so fun is after we finished that, he said to his mom, he's like, will you post the picture on Facebook? Because he was so proud and he wanted everybody to know that we had finished. I'm getting emotional about it because he was so excited to finish that. So to provide that for somebody, I mean, why wouldn't you? Yeah. Why wouldn't you? If you've got the legs,
yeah,
you know, help somebody else.
It is on my bucket list. I just need to find, I tell Brent, keep bugging me about, because it's so hard to find weekends, as you know, like Atlanta was, it's just weekends don't work out, but Brent, keep bugging me. And to anybody out there, I can't say enough wonderful things about the Kyle Peace Foundation, like what they do. You guys can listen to their episode, and they just finished Kona again, which just makes me want to cry just thinking about it. But I'm so glad that you will be there, and maybe we can send Tracy Wu over to you because that's the area she will be at to get a little interview. Tracy loves Brit. Like last year was like every morning's topic of discussion. Where is hot guy going to be in the morning?
Well, I mean, Brent was wearing his short shorts.
He
his
was.
Quad run, I mean, it was beautiful. It
He's
was beautiful.
Just, that's the guy. We've got some rapid fire questions, but the last thing I want to ask is a question that I don't think I'd ask many other announcers, but you, I think your point of view and how you view announcing is different than I think how John and a lot of announcers announce. What do you, like, how would you describe your point of view as a race announcer?
My point of view, you know, John, you kind of alluded to this. I see the best of everybody. I have this privileged position to have this kind of behind the scenes look at the journey that athletes are going through. And it is a privilege because there are times, especially on the mountain at 29 or 29 or at an Ironman where you get to see athletes multiple days, where you see their fears and their insecurities and you see their vulnerabilities and you see them step into this discomfort. And then you watch them as this event and this journey for them unfolds into this challenge. And then to be there at the culmination of that journey and to make eye contact with them and say, you did it. Like, not just you are an Ironman, but you did it. You did what you said you wanted to do. And to be able to watch that full spectrum, that behind the scenes look of someone's journey, what a privilege we have to do that. I mean, that I tell people all the time, like you said, John, if you want to renew your faith in humanity, just come to a race. You're seeing the best of people on display. And how lucky are we as announcers to get the best of people? And granted, not everybody has a great day out there. They don't. But we're also in the position to help them reframe that and to help them celebrate part of that journey. And so I see that as our role as an announcer to make sure that everybody takes away some positivity in their life from the exchange that they have with the events that we're at and at those finish line moments, even if it's just a moment, because sometimes all we get is a moment with people. But you can change someone's life and their perspective in that moment. And we are just the privileged people to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I think it's, I think also, you know, when you talk about that positivity and something that, you know, and Carissa has always talked about this is, you know, somebody may come 1 year trying to run their first half and get swept at 9 miles. And then you talk to them the next year and they're back and they finish. And it's almost more rewarding, obviously, having tried and failed to step up and do it again. So, yeah, we try to keep them laughing, but we also try to make sure that they realize we appreciate each and every one of you coming out because everybody has a story.
Yes.
And if you sit down and talk to people, you know, whether they PR'd or got swept at mile nine, I bet you their story is really, really compelling and will tell you a lot about people. All right, moving on. We're moving on to our rapid fire. It comes just as advertised, Colleen. We're going to throw rapid fire questions. Don't overthink it. Don't overthink it. Just give us your first, the first thing that comes to mind. Carissa, I believe you start.
Yeah, you get an, usually people get Disney rapid fire, but you get announcer rapid fire. The first ever one,
announcer rapid fire.
All right. Don't think, just, I don't want a story this time. Best race to announce.
Oh, like 29 or 29, any of them. Like
that's what
any
I thought you were going to say.
Any of them.
Favorite event you've competed in?
Boston Marathon.
Best race swag you ever got? I changed the question, John.
Best race swag. Anytime I've been given a towel, I got a beach towel at a 10K in Rockville, Maryland that I loved.
It's usually shoes for me, but...
We so infrequently get them. That's probably why you've forgotten that.
I don't know if I've ever got that for swag.
All right. We're jumping in and out of... So I'm going to take Carissa's question. Best part about being an announcer, and you've sort of covered that, but just in the elevator pitch, best part about being an announcer?
People. The people. That's the good. People I get to be with.
John, you can keep the next question.
Most difficult part of being an announcer?
Never being able to go to the bathroom without someone complaining.
What is something you can't announce an event without?
My husband.
He does the sound. It's important.
He's my sound guy. He makes me sound good and helps me keep my voice. So my husband.
I will say, not my current wife, who's not here and not listening to this, and so I'll try to make sure she doesn't listen. I actually, my girlfriend before her, I lived with for 3 years, sound engineer. They're actually good, really good to have around. Very important as a performer to have good sound people around.
They're amazing.
I hear you. Okay, announcer catchphrase if you have one.
Oh, a catchphrase. Welcome to your Everest. That's what I say. I would probably be the Mike. If Mike's got the, you are an Iron Man, I would have to say welcome to your Everest.
Nice. Event you haven't announced, but you would like to.
Boston Marathon, hands down. And if you guys have a contact, get me in there, please.
I know people, but they're all people who tell me not to bother calling them. So I don't think I'd be helpful. Maybe try.
Yeah, I don't think I can rely on you, John.
All right. Announcer morning breakfast. Do you have a go-to? Or do you just switch it up as to how your body feels?
I eat the same thing for breakfast every single day of my entire life. This has been going on for years and years and years. I eat oatmeal every single morning. And even when I travel, I bring my little protein powder and my like chia seeds and my nuts and my PB Fit powder that goes in it. And I just pour it all in and I eat that every single morning.
John, I haven't said this about Colleen before. I didn't want to not upset you, but surprise you. She doesn't drink coffee.
I'm sorry.
And you can hear people who are texting me. And I think it's people who actually heard that through the microphone. It sounded like you said you didn't drink coffee. I know that can't be true. What did you say?
I don't drink coffee.
Sorry?
And I actually don't drink a lot of caffeine. If I'm at a multi-day event, I try to wait until the last day to have like a Coke. I'll just drink like a Diet Coke. But
see, I told you she's not like us, Johnny. We're throwing people if they get the wrong kind of K-cup. Excuse me, where's my Pisteo? Is it Pisteo?
Oh my gosh.
Pistello?
I saw Carissa pinned a PA up against the side of the trailer and screamed at them because they had the wrong coffee. It gets ugly.
Or Dasani water. Either one. Sarah, are you listening? And we're going to, in every podcast, until you stop getting us Dasani water, we will bring it up.
Yeah. Can we talk about Dasani? Why does it taste like that?
It hurts my stomach. We're never getting a sponsorship from them. All right. You have survived rapid fire and you are almost free of the 3-2-1 Go podcast, except you have our traditional closing questions. Johnny will kick
all
us
right.
off.
When you get yourself to a hard place in a workout, a day announcing, how do you self-motivate?
Honestly, I lean into those experiences of other people, like watching other people. That's how I've gotten through my hardest races, was going outside of myself, removing myself from where I'm at and focusing on someone else and maybe their difficulties and what they're going through, because that helps me get out of my own head. So
as we've talked about Finish Line, it's an amazingly inspiring place. We've talked about Missy. We've talked about the Peace Brothers. Is there a moment for you, a Finish Line moment, that continues to stand out?
There was a moment at the Great Smoky Mountain Half Marathon. My goodness, it had to have been maybe 2018. And it was very, very late in the event. And there was a whole bunch of runners there from the Queen City Running Club, so out of Cincinnati. And approaching me coming up this final rise was a group of people. And there was a man that was in a wheelchair. And this whole team was pushing him up this final hill. Before they got to the finish line, which there was hardly anybody there anymore. This is the end of a half marathon. It's really late in the day. It's just kind of me and a few other people. He stopped and he stood up and he walked across that finish line and then got back in his chair. And I had the privilege of getting to know him. He was being pushed by his then fiance, now his wife. And he had been in an accident that had robbed his body of the ability to run anymore. And his Queen City Running Club had supported him and got him back out there in the chair to be able to find this finish line. And I just remember how impactful that was, where there's actually a video clip that my husband had taken where I just said, when life gives you lemons, just turn around and throw it right back at their faces. And that was what I saw from him, was like, life was hard. He was in a wheelchair. He was partially paralyzed at this point, but there he was, you know, still finding the finish line in any way that he possibly could. And I think that's what I love so much about what we get to do, is just those moments and that reframing of what finish lines are and what we can actually do.
Good answer. All right, Colleen, if people want to keep up with you, you're very busy, as we've seen, and they want to see you at a race, stop by and say hi. Maybe it's something they're taking part in. How do they best follow you?
Best way to follow me is at Voice of the Mountain on Instagram. And if you like chickens and chicken content, you can follow my personal page at Colleen Rue on Instagram. So I am a chicken mom as well. So
John is speechless. He's intrigued. He's
like, no, I want to go there now. So go ahead, Chris. You rap. I love chickens.
I will send you the link to Colleen's Instagram. But hopefully our Run Disney family, they will get to know you a little better when they see you at Dopey. They can say hi. Do you know who you'll be pushing at Dopey?
Yes, we're going to be pushing Kylie. So watch for our Team Kylie KPF shirts. We're going to have those on. And we're getting those. They've gone to the printer and everything. We're so excited to have those. So watch for Kylie. We will be pushing her. So Team Kylie for
awesome.
Disney.
Well, thank you so much, Colleen. Thanks for joining us. And we will see you in a bit.
Yeah, thanks, thank you guys so much.
All right. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Before we wrap up, we want to give a special shout out to our friend Sarah Akers with Runs on Magic. Now, Sarah is a passionate Run Disney enthusiast. She loves nothing more than helping you plan those magical Run Disney weekends. But with her expertise, the possibilities are endless. Whether you're dreaming of a honeymoon escape, an all-inclusive girls trip, a boys trip to Las Vegas, a family cruise, international adventure, whatever it is, Sarah is here to make it happen. Best part? Her travel planning services are completely complimentary. Sarah creates personalized itineraries and specializes in Run Disney, Universal, and cruise vacations. And for our listeners, she's offering a special promo. Use the code 321GO when requesting your vacation quote, and you could receive up to a $200 Disney gift card or booking credit, depending on your destination. You can connect with Sarah on Instagram at RunsOnMagic. for the latest offers and more, or reach out to her directly at runsonmagictravel@gmail.com. Thank you so much, Sarah.
All right. Thank you, Colleen. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Weston, for editing. Marathon Weekend's real soon. We'll see you real soon.